It seems to be clear that people need to exercise at different times of the day. And for some people, it's beneficial. For some, it might be not beneficial. And we see some people who have their peak performance in the morning, but some have, you know, variations of about 20, 25%. So they are able to achieve 20% higher performance in the afternoon as compared to the morning. And obviously, if you are one of those people, then you have a clear disadvantage if you exercise in the morning.
Hey guys, welcome back. This is Drew and Alex. Going back this week into the world of sports science research. This week, we are traveling with you all the way to Switzerland, specifically the University of Basel, Switzerland, located in Basel, Switzerland. We have Raphael Nair and Ralph Roth, both of them hailing from the Department of Sport, Exercise, and Health, the Faculty of Medicine. They collaborated with a team from Harvard Medical School's chronobiology program on the study that we're going to talk to you guys about today. The title of that study is The Best Time of Day for Strength and Endurance Training to Improve Health and Performance, a Systematic Review with Meta-Analysis. So obviously a very attractive title. Alex, what are your thoughts on today's discussion?
So what you're going to get here is something you're probably going to hear a fair amount of on our podcast and probably heard in the past, and that is When you talk to the actual researchers doing the real work, you're not going to get the crazy hyped headlines you see in the news of like, new study finds that everybody should always train in the morning, because that's usually not what the findings are. Usually there's more nuance. They acknowledge that humans are complicated. There's other extenuating factors. Even if there is a biologically perfect time of day to train, which it doesn't seem like there is, there would also be lifestyle and daily schedule confounding factors and all sorts of other things that play into the decision. So we are going to get a little bit into the nuance to just kind of help you guys make decisions. We will bring it around at the end of the conversation for some practical takeaways. And if anybody listening to this episode is Swiss or knows better, let us know if it's Basel or Basel or whatever it is.
Basel. What does James Bond have the Basel character?
I have no idea.
There's some movie. Anyway, if you're familiar at all with systematic reviews, meta-analyses, that type of, I suppose, that corner of the research industry, that when done well, they're actually quite interesting. This particular paper, they screened 14,125 articles. 14,125. 26 were included in the systematic review, and 7 of those were included in the meta-analyses to follow. And as Alex mentioned, the results, as often are the case, were inconclusive, which I think is in and of itself useful to know. They'll tell you, and we talk about this with the guys, there's some evidence that there's a benefit when training and testing occur at the same time of day. So for example, if you tend to train in the morning and then you test, say, you know, in the Army example, in ACFT or just military PT testing in general, if that happens around the same time of day, but they acknowledge that the risk of bias in a lot of these studies, and I think this is the case in a lot of sports science, the risk of bias is very high. So as ever with this type of thing, take it with a grain of salt. This is the reason why we bring these guys on to talk about it. We will have a link to the paper in the show notes. And as well, we will have some information that you guys can use to contact this research team should you be interested. So enjoy. Are you in, you're in Switzerland?
Yes.
I'm jealous. I'll tell you, as an American, this may just be me, but the algorithm on social media just feeds pictures of like beautiful, for Switzerland, just pictures of beautiful waterfalls and like really pretty lakes and all these small villages. And so all I know of Switzerland is like, it looks like a fairy tale. And then here's me in the United States, just like, so I'm jealous is what I'm getting at here.
In fact, it really does look like that.
Of course. Yeah, of course it does.
One of my high school friends moved to Switzerland a few years ago, and the pictures are nonstop gorgeous. It's out of control.
Yeah. So we are both originally from Germany, so we moved here too for that reason.
I don't blame you at all. I know we kind of went a little bit back and forth on email about kind of who we are and what this is, but... And we'll get into this, I think, as we're kind of going along. But I think the reason why you guys' work was so interesting was because as both of us being involved in the military and specifically kind of like the exercise science, human performance side of the military, the big conversation is around, I don't even know if I would call it a conversation, but the big, conversation is around physical training and like when it takes place, what it looks like, yada, yada, yada. And so, I mean, if you're familiar at all with the American military, like PT happens in the morning, no matter what. Like it is sacred. That's when it happens. And as we're getting more and more civilians and folks that have had more exposure to exercise science into these teams, these performance teams, a lot of them are starting to ask questions around like, hey, why don't we change some of the things that you've been doing for this long and see if we get better results? And that obviously creates, I don't know, debate, conflict, whatever you want to call it. But the title of your paper was especially interesting. And then obviously the results and kind of the methods that you guys use were like, I mean, I think this will be a great episode. So that was a long ramble on my part, but that's kind of where we're coming from.
Yeah. Thank you very much for having us.
Can we ask you guys, I guess as kind of an opener or a starter, and you talk about some of this in your work, but what was the background to this and how did you guys arrive at sort of the overall design? What made you want to pursue this as a question?
Oh, yeah, that's quite a long story, so I will try to keep it short. The initial work we started with was a study on the effect of light exposure on physical performance. So there's a lot of research ongoing that if you expose people to light of certain frequencies, that it suppresses the hormone melatonin and keeps you awake later in the evening. For example, on many iPhones, you have these blue blocker screens, and we try to do the exact opposite, that we expose people to blue light to improve the performance in the evening, or that it doesn't drop in the evening. And we didn't find any effects, any positive effects of the light exposure. So we went one step back and then asked the question, is it actually true that the performance decreases in the late evening? And so we started the first work where we performed a review to see if there are differences in the time of peak performance during the day. So if it's actually true, that's also a common statement, that the highest performance is achieved in the late afternoon or early evening. We wanted to see if that is true. And so we performed two studies ourselves and then also conducted a meta-analysis. And then the subsequent next step after that meta-analysis was then to look what happens in the long term if you exercise at different times of the day. And this was then the work that got your attention.
So I think there's some like foundation laying we can do for the audience before we dive into this a little bit. And this is kind of what you guys covered in your paper, but what are the underlying factors? What are the mechanisms that change performance based on different times of day? You guys laid it out pretty well in the paper, but just for the sake of setting up this conversation, whether it's like changes in blood pressure, changes in core body temperature, like all those things, how do they change throughout the day?
Yeah. So they are diurnal and circadian variations that have been shown for many body functions. So even if you lie perfectly still during the entire day, your blood pressure will change, your heart rate will change, your core body temperature will change during the course of a day. And all these factors can affect physical performance. For example, that's the reason why you perform a warm-up before you start exercise. But to be honest, we don't actually know how all these factors lead to diurnal variations in physical performance. We know that hormones change, we know that heart rate changes, but we do not know which factor contributes how much to the diurnal variation in performance.
It's interesting, and you dived into some of this, but like when I'm thinking about just for myself or athletes that I've worked with, and you know, some people will tell you like I'm a morning person or I'm an evening person, or how did you, and this might get into some of the study design stuff, but how do you account for, or how do these papers account for, maybe the best way to phrase this is like subjective preference or athlete preference? Because I understand physiologically these things are happening throughout the day, but then I guess on top of that, or maybe beneath that, is this sort of athlete experience, athlete preference, in the sense of like, I just feel like I perform better in the morning. Does that then have an effect on, you know, performance effectively?
Yes, that's a very difficult question. So I think there are different aspects to that question. So what we found in our meta-analysis is that there seems to be some kind of effect of the habitual training time on when performance changes. So in those studies where people either trained in the morning or trained in the evening, we saw that the group that was training in the evening later had a higher performance in the evening, and that group that trained more in the morning had a higher performance later in the morning. So there seems to be some kind of, how would you say, habilitation effect.
Mm-hmm.
So in fact, it could have an impact in the long term if you have regular exercise times. What we found in our studies is that we asked the people when they regularly exercise, and we did not see any correlation. So it was not that those people who exercised more in the morning scored higher in the morning. And what was also very interesting to see is that the athletes were not able to predict or anticipate their time of peak performance. So we asked them before the study what they think when their highest performance will be. And then they performed maximum endurance or maximum strength tests at different times of the day. And we did not tell them how they scored during those tests. And then after they performed all the tests, at the end of the study, we asked them again, what do you think, at which time of the day did you score highest? Some changed what they said before, some didn't change it, some stick with it. But most of them were really, really bad at predicting their peak performance and also at afterwards telling which their time of peak performance was. So that was quite interesting to see.
Did you guys, I mean, just as a follow on to that, because I'm thinking of myself and I've gone through periods where, you know, I would consider myself a morning person versus, you know, I like to train in the evenings. Did you guys encounter anyone who was just like dead set on, I perform my best in the morning, and then come to find out they've been, you know, lying to themselves for years and turns out they're actually an afternoon person? Or is it that simple? I don't know.
Yeah, we had a few people that were sure that they were best performing in the afternoon and then had their highest performance at 7 a.m. Interestingly, almost nobody said that they would have their highest performance in the morning, but we had a few people that scored highest in the morning. So I don't know if this also some kind of, let's call it media bias, that they always hear that the peak performance is in the afternoon, so they might think that they will also be best in the afternoon.
I'm thinking of like, and no offense to CrossFitters, but just sort of the early morning CrossFit workout cult who swears by like, I perform best in the morning, and that's after they've just, you know, downed 10 cups of coffee and snorted a bunch of pre-workout.
A pretty narrow question here, but I saw it mentioned in the study that when you went to the meta-analysis phase, you found several studies that undersampled evening chronotypes. So like getting into that, like personal preference for when to train and things like that. Do you have any idea why morning chronotype folks were more likely to get involved in this? Is there like a sampling bias situation there?
Can you first define what a chronotype is? Because I'm sure there are people out there who don't know what a chronotype is.
Yes, sure. So chronotype refers to your habitual sleep-wake time. So there are people that get up rather early in the morning and go to bed rather early in the late evening. That's what we consider early chronotype, or maybe you have heard the term lark, like the bird. And then there are intermediate chronotypes who have more or less sleep and bedtime that fits most people's. And then there are also late chronotypes, so people who go to bed late during the night and also sleep in during the morning. And yes, to get to your question, what we saw was a very strong underrepresentation of late chronotypes. And we do not really know what the reason for that is. What is interesting is that there are differences in the prevalence, so how frequent you find different chronotypes in different sports. And in many long endurance sports like marathon running, you have much more early chronotypes. So it could be if they were screening for endurance athletes that thereby they would have more early morning types. Another reason could be depending on the time when you want your people to participate in the study. So if I ask people to exercise at 6 a.m. in the morning, it's likely that people who usually get up at 10 a.m. won't participate in the study because they're not really keen on getting up 4 or 5 hours earlier than usual. But for late chronotypes, it's probably not a big problem to stay up until 8 p.m., for example.
Actually, I mean, that brings up an interesting question about, and again, this might be flirting with study design, but like, how do you control for that in the sense that like, if people are early chronotypes, if they are someone who likes to work out at 6 a.m., how do you account for sort of the self-selection bias of people slotting themselves into a study that occurs at a particular time of day, if that's just not the type of the time of day that they would traditionally train? I don't know if that question even makes sense, but that's where my head goes as you were explaining that.
I'm not sure if I understand it correct. So how you deal with the fact that you have this imbalance in late and early chronotypes in a study. That is actually a big problem. So there are just two things that you can do. The one thing is that you actively try to recruit late chronotypes to get a balanced sample. That could be quite challenging. And the other thing, if you are not able to do that, is just you need to be aware that the results that you generate are only relevant or only are generalizable to that population that you measured.
Mm-hmm.
And to build on that, another problem that we had with all those studies is that, for example, female athletes were extremely underrepresented. So most of the studies are only done in male participants. So that obviously also means that what we found is only valid for men, or mainly.
I think that's totally fair. Do you guys, and we may have asked this in a roundabout way already, but I, you know, if there's other comments on it, just from your research, did you find any factors? And I think you talked about some of these, caffeine being an example, but that they contribute to higher performance at different times of the day. Like I would imagine we mentioned caffeine in the morning. By the time you get to the afternoon, evening, I mean, you've had a couple of meals, you've sort of gotten on with your day. I mean, did you guys see any of those types of factors that had a contributing effect to higher performance?
To higher performance is not really what we looked at. It's more at, we looked at when they achieve their highest performance.
Sure.
And I think there are a few common misconceptions or data that was interpreted with not enough care. For example, core body temperature is something that is frequently hypothesized.
Mm-hmm.
So core body temperature peaks in the late afternoon, early evening, and that is what we saw for many performance outcomes. So the easiest conclusion for many is that the reason why the performance is highest in the late afternoon is that it's due to the core body temperature. But there have been a lot of studies where they modulated core body temperature, for example, that body temperature in the morning was brought up to the evening level with extensive warm-up or warm baths, or the other way around, that core body temperature was cooled down in the evening to morning levels. And they played around with all different kinds of combinations, and it can explain part of it, but definitely not all of the variation. So core body temperature could be one thing. Another thing that is frequently brought up is the chronotype, and some get to the easy conclusion that early chronotypes, or people who get up early in the morning, achieve their highest performance earlier during the day, and people that get up later during the morning achieve their highest performance later during the day. And there are some studies that found that, but overall, there's not a lot of evidence for that. Mm-hmm. So in none of our studies, we could confirm that, and there are a lot of other studies that also did not find this association between early chronotypes having peak performance early during the day and late chronotypes having it later during the day.
Mm-hmm.
So Drew's question there kind of introduces the idea of like confounding factors that are hard to control for, like meal timing, like caffeine consumption, like all these different things. And that brings me to a question I'm kind of curious about that goes way beyond just this study, but you routinely point out in your research that there are a number of quality control issues There's a lot of heterogeneity between the studies you're looking at. The study design isn't consistent. How they collect the data isn't consistent. What data they collect is not consistent. It's, and like, I think beneficially, you do point towards some like gold standard methodology stuff that people could use to improve the quality. But how big a problem do you think that study design issue is across exercise science in general? Because this is something you see pop up in studies all across the human performance space. And I'm a little bit tempted to pin the question on Ralph and see what his thoughts are.
It's like the most broad question ever. What do you guys think of sports science?
Yeah, it's really a big question because we are dealing with this problem all the time. Every time we take performance and strength, you feel like you do strength measurement and everyone is thinking, well, I know how it works. So we do 1RM and then, well, everything is going well. And you see there are a lot of problems even with a normal deadlift or squat. So you can do so many things different and how you just like say how to do the movement and how you warm up for the movement. So you will get a lot of different things. And coming to strength measurements, you will see that they do the squat as a 1RM or they do it on strength machines and they do jumps. And everything is like, I'm doing strength, but there are so many differences in between those different measurement types. So you won't get really one answer out of all those different measurements. So that's, I think, the biggest problem that most people or most of the people who do those strength testings don't think about what they're really testing.
We have, I mean, you phrased it a lot more eloquently than we do historically. I think we tend to agree that the larger body of sports science research is lacking in some sense. As folks that were conducting a meta-analysis, was that frustrating as you guys picked through a lot of this work, just realizing like, man, people are getting, well, that sounds accusatory. I don't want to say people are getting away with stuff, but like people are publishing work that is really, I mean, there's a lot of gaps. And when you guys are trying to put it all together and reach a conclusion, which, you know, a lot of your stuff admittedly was a little bit inconclusive. Like, was that frustrating?
It was really. I can tell you.
Smile.
We had often the point that we looked at the measurements for strength, and they were, we want to put them together to take one conclusion out of it, and it was like, no, you can't put the measurement in open kinetic change and compare it with the measurement in closed kinetic change. You can't compare a measurement of the calf with the thigh muscle, and also not with the hip muscle. Well, everything is different. There are different muscles. They perform different, and they are different people. Mm-hmm. So there are so many things you have to look at if you do a measurement. It's not that easy to control really for everything, and that's the biggest problem we have when we do sports science measurements, that they're normally not controlled for all those things, in which range you do it, at which range of motion. Mm-hmm. Are you like in a knee angle of 90 degree or 110 and 150, or at which speed would you do a movement? Well, you every time you just take this measurement, you will get another score.
It does seem like that's particularly challenging when you're looking at time of day related things, because like, as you've already noted, right, if you want to test somebody in the early morning, there's a high chance that you're also going to compromise their sleep in the process. And there's a lower chance that they will have properly fueled before that happens. And it's really, really difficult unless you have a perfectly controlled environment where you like have the athlete in a consistent facility and you feed them and you monitor their sleep and all of these things. It's really, really hard to find out whether it's the time of day that's having the effect that you're seeing, or whether it just happens to be that people are properly fueled at certain times of day and people are well rested at certain times of day, and nearly impossible to parse that out.
Yes, exactly. It's very difficult to control. And also regarding the quality of the studies, was also frustrating is the reporting. So I see that there are reasons to perform tests differently and to test different muscle groups. And we will always have that problem that we can't combine all the measurements. But the biggest issue was really just that we often did not know what the authors did because it was just not reported. And it started with basic participant characteristics. So in many studies, we don't even know the sex of the participants or the age or something like that. So even the most basic things were often not reported. And yeah, like you say, things like they had sleep controlled or physical activity, that's very hard to say. But on the upside, it's getting better and better. So we see a big difference in the quality of the studies that were published in the last few years compared to those studies that were published a decade or two ago. So it's definitely changing a lot.
I have so many thoughts now about sort of the landscape of sports science research, and I don't want to dive too deep down a rabbit hole. But one of the things that I experienced sort of in my own graduate school work around exercise science was that a lot of the research studies use, I'll call them like laboratory-based movements. And I understand why. I mean, isokinetic dynamometers, strain gauges, infrared cameras, you guys mentioned a lot of these in your work. Do you think that looking at studies, if there are any, that tend to trend more towards movements that athletes like actually want to do or movements that they actually would normally do in training? Because again, in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, your average training session for your average person consists of, I don't know, back squats, bench press, dumbbell curls, running, yada, yada, yada. But most of the research that we have looks at things that tend to isolate movements a lot more. And again, I understand why that is, but from an athlete's perspective, I would imagine it's a lot easier to get motivated to do, say, a morning workout that's like movements that I enjoy versus stepping into a lab to do an isokinetic dynamometer. Of course, they're not going to be as motivated. I mean, that was a long rambling sort of thought, and maybe there's a question in there, but how do the studies account for that? And I don't even know if there's an answer to that question, but how do you account for that from the motivational standpoint of athletes doing well in the morning versus the evening?
Well, of course, the way should be always that we test as close as the movement at the movement of the athlete. So if we have rowers, we try to get them doing movements of rowing, mm-hmm. even on an isokinet. So we just like model the same position for the legs and the same hip flexion. So nowadays we try to get very close to this point where we test the athletes at the point they perform, or they do their performance in on the pitch perhaps. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, there's always those thing like science where we like to control everything.
Yeah.
And what we now try to do is just to come as close as possible with both sides. So we look at what are doing the athletes, and we try to get them tests where they feel like, well, I do my own thing. I'm still in my sports. And we try to get measurements where we were interested in, where we see those muscles should be the one who do the most work, and we want to test them. But what we also understand, and that's really a big problem of science, is science want always to get to a very narrow question. So you want to just get it down to one main question, mm-hmm. but the body works very complex. So we just like always at this point where we have to handle this. And what I want to do is not what I can measure. Mm-hmm. So it's always you have to look very close what you're doing. So I see the point. But if you want to do science, you will get it closer from your question. If you want to do sport, you have to look at many different things. So it's still a trade-off you always have to go.
And this is a slight aside, I suppose, but to your point, has the landscape around sports science, exercise science, has it changed in the last couple of years and maybe even decades as the larger sort of industry has started to recognize the human element in that. And I guess through the lens of you guys' work specifically, when I think of best time of day to work out, you know, you do have sort of the physiological components that you talked about, the different biomarkers that we can look at, and we've optimized for those things based on time of day. But then you also kind of have this new agey, you know, subjective human element to it, this complex systems theory discussion, what have you. Has the science shifted a little bit to allow for more of that? So to your point, allowing for some of that human element around what the athletes prefer, what they like to do, versus just saying, let's isolate the quadricep and extract as much physiological information as we can and come to a conclusion that may not actually be supported anecdotally in the field when we look at what athletes are actually doing. I don't know if that makes any sense at all, because I was just rambling.
It does. Yes, I think there are two lines you can see. There's one line who wants to work with the athlete, and this line will explain the athlete why we are doing things, and they understand, and they will do it because they just see the benefit in what they are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another part, also sports science, they want to earn money. And it does not matter what they want to sell. They mm-hmm. make it getting easy for the people. If it makes any sense, doesn't matter.
I love that.
So you have you should normally everyone has to get like someone who knows what he's doing and has just to deal with the things he's doing, and then can make a decision. Mm-hmm. It's the same with our students. It's always, they are asking always for recipes. Well, I have no recipes. I just can explain how the body works, and you can work it, and then maybe you look at it, what you get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no recipe, and there's also no mystery in it.
So factoring all that in and understanding that a lot of this is going to be individualized, it seems like the one, at least from my reading of your work, the most consistent finding is that the optimal training is done at the same time of day as when you have to perform. If you know you have to perform in the morning, train in the morning. If you know you have to perform in the evening, train in the evening. Do you guys agree? Is that like a correct takeaway to take from your work? And or are there any other foundational insights that you guys think readers should take away from this?
Yeah, it's not incorrect what you said, but I would see with some limitations. So the problem is, from those studies that we could include in the meta-analysis, many of those come from the same lab. And I think that's a big problem, that if you have a lot of research that is performed by the same lab and hasn't been proven or reproduced by other labs, then that is an issue. And the reason why all the studies that we included in the meta-analysis are from the same lab is that since they are from the same lab, they use the same measurement methods and are therefore combinable in a meta-analysis. So yeah, I think that there's a lot more research needed to check for this. But I think it also makes sense from a physiological point of view, that you get some habitualization, and that it could be that you achieve better at the time where you're used to exercise. The problem is obviously for competitive sports that your competition does not always take place at the same time of the day. And therefore, it would be beneficial to know what underlying mechanisms cause these diurnal variations so that you can alter them. For example, if you know it would be only core body temperature, then you only just need to change core body temperature. If you know it's a certain hormone, you can change that hormone. But from what we see so far, it's very complex, and we haven't found an easy solution yet to determine when who is going to achieve.
Well, okay, so I'm glad you mentioned that, because one of the things that I know we were going back and forth on via email prior to doing this was discussions around sort of the way that the Army, and I mean, I'll go broader, just the way that the military does training, testing, what have you. So based off what you guys have seen, what are some of the risks at play for an organization like this, a massive organization dealing with a ton of human beings? and they choose to sort of funnel everybody into one workout schedule. I mean, I think a lot of the pros and cons are pretty obvious, but you guys are coming at this question from, I think, an interesting angle when we talk about sort of the physiological second and third order effects of potentially training at the, you know, quote unquote, wrong time of the day. Or what would your take be on that for an organization that is committed to a singular approach?
Singular approach, you mean exercise in the morning?
Exercise in the morning, that's when we're doing it, no changes.
Yeah. So I think the pros are obviously the reasons why they are doing it. It's easier to schedule. Mm-hmm. You have all people exercise at the same time. It's a strict and clear schedule. It could also have some benefits for team building, things like that, if people exercise together. But from everything that we've seen so far, it's not the best time of exercise for all people. So it seems to be clear that people need to exercise at different times of the day. And for some people, it's beneficial. For some, it might be not beneficial. And we see some people who have their peak performance in the morning, but some have unit variations of about 20-25%. So they are able to achieve 20% higher performance in the afternoon as compared to the morning. And obviously, if you are one of those people, then you have a clear disadvantage if you exercise in the morning. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important that you allow more flexibility. But the problem is, we cannot tell you yet what the best time of exercise is. On a group level, it's probably in the afternoon, but that's not true for every individual. And we don't know yet how to determine who should exercise at what time.
Well, and that was, you kind of just hit my next question right on the head, because I think the obvious follow-up, you know, for anybody listening to this who's in a decision-making position, their next question is going to be, okay, well, cool. How do I determine who goes where? And what you're saying is that we don't have that level of clarity yet. Do you think that that is something that we could get to, or is it just way too complex of a question with way too many factors at play?
No, it's not. I think there are two points. One is, if you want to predict it with just some basic information, that's, I think, extremely complicated and will take many years until we get there. But on the easiest approach is that you can just test it. So mm-hmm. if you test people at different times of the day, you perform tests at different times of the day, and then you see when they score best, and then you know when their time of peak performance is. So I think for an institution like the Army, it shouldn't be too complicated to test people at different times of the day. And this could also be a problem with the physical performance testing. I know they have to do performance tests regularly. So if you are scheduled to do your performance test in the morning and your peak performance is in the late afternoon, you will score worse mm-hmm. as compared to other people. And I think, just to build up on that, another problem that we do not know much about is how your exercise timing, we've only spoken so far about how it affects, for example, your muscle growth or your increase in performance. We don't know how it affects other behaviors. Mm-hmm. So what happens with people who exercise late in the evening? Will their sleep change? Will their meal timing change? So all these interactions, we know almost nothing about at the moment.
So I don't know if I have a question here as much as a statement, but just a trend I've seen with military testing in particular is that we already know training primarily happens in the morning. Testing seems even more consistent that it happens in the morning, and it often happens even earlier than training. So I have seen pretty regularly soldiers say that their time to show up for testing was 4:30 in the morning, 5 in the morning, something like that. That seems routine. And I already see the expressions you guys are making. I would love to know what your thoughts are on that being the protocol.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear. So we see some people that have almost no DNA variation, and we see people with like 20-25%. So yeah. If you have 20% DNA variation and you are one of those people who need to take the test at that time, whether you have your lowest performance, then you have a clear disadvantage. It's as simple as that.
25% drop off in performance just from going at the wrong time of day.
Yeah, so in maximum performance.
Man, that's insane.
So in some individuals, some have just 2-3%, but I think on average it was something like between 8 and 10%.
Still, I mean, even if the average is 8 to 10%, that's a mat. I mean, for some people, that can be, well, you know, from an army standpoint, that can be a pass or a fail. That's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, could be. And yeah, I think what is interesting in this study that we did on strength performance, so we test different muscle groups all at the same time of the day and then different times of the day. And we found some consistency between the different muscle groups, so which makes sense that your arm strength and your leg strength both reach the peak at the same time of the day and both reach their lowest performance at the same time of the day. So this is a bit assuring that it's probably not a measurement error, that if you have the same magnitude of variation and the same times of peak and lowest performance in different muscle groups, then it's unlikely that it's measurement errors.
So you mentioned that we've been focusing so far on performance, hypertrophy, things like that. And I do want to bring in a little bit of what you guys discussed with health outcomes. So one that stood out to me is the finding that evening training appeared to be better for people focusing on blood pressure issues, trying to lower their blood pressure through training. But you also noted that there's a confounding factor of drug interactions, because the time of day they take their blood pressure medication compared to the time of day they train. Do you think the finding on evening training being good for blood pressure outcomes is strong enough based on what you've seen to recommend that for patients, or is that still too preliminary to really have a strong idea?
I think that it's too preliminary. So study you're pointing out, I think it was very well designed. It was done with great care and had a very low risk of bias. It was really a high quality study. But there's a reason why in science we perform meta-analysis. So to pool data from different studies, just to make sure that we can reproduce the results. So I think it's a good indicator because it was a good study, but I think it would be important to have some more studies on that.
On that point, and you guys, I think mentioned some of this in your conclusions, but with regards to this body of evidence and the studies that you guys looked at, what kind of direction do you think some of the future studies should go in? Like, where are some of the gaps that you would like to see filled?
Oh, that's a good question.
I'm sure there's a million of them. I love the gestures behind the camera.
So one point we already touched on this is obviously that it also not only that the research goes into performance, but also into health outcomes, because this is what affects the largest part of the population. So I think there's a lot of research that needs to be done there. Another point we also touched on briefly is the generalizability. So almost all the studies were done in young, mainly physical education students that were male. So I think it's also important that we have better generalizability. And then what is complicated, but would also be very important to know, is the underlying mechanisms. So that we do not only know that, for example, performance in the evening improves blood pressure, but that we also understand how it does that and why performance, or for example, training at one time of the day is more beneficial than as compared to another time of the day. So I think, yeah, the generalizability, the health outcomes, and the underlying mechanisms, I think, are three important parts.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know like the industry probably wants you to sit there and tell them exactly what time of day they should work out, and then how to determine that based on, you know, these three questions that we're going to ask our athletes. And it sounds like we're a pretty far way away from that.
Yes. And I think that's something in general that we often see, that these very broad and easy recommendations are often just too simplistic, and it's
they
most
look good
of the
on
time
Instagram.
More complex. Yeah.
I did, before getting on here with you guys, I did a little searching for headlines on the subject, and there's a consistent kind of string of them, and every single headline is just trying to generalize the results of one small study. And I get it. A journalist that opens up your study is probably not going to be excited by how many times you say it's unclear. there's studies on both sides, can't generalize, all that kind of stuff. How do we, what, I mean, I guess my question here is, how do we communicate the difficulty of answering these questions? Or maybe it's the problem that the questions aren't the right questions, but how do we communicate that to a lay audience who doesn't want to hear about the methodology of putting together a systematic review and meta-analysis? Like, how do we explain to people to like steer clear of these oversimplified headlines of what time of day is better to train and understand some of the factors you guys have discussed here?
Oh, it's your
turn. They're looking at each other trying to get it. Yeah.
That's quite difficult. I think we just need to accept that it's often not that simple, and that it's most of the time not an easy answer that we get.
I want to ask you guys this, because, and I don't know where I'm going here, but I think as coaches and as athletes and just people in this industry who are, you know, in the gym, in the trenches, whatever you want to call it, there's sometimes a disconnect between what's happening there and what's happening in the lab, in the research world, like the work that people like you guys are doing that is very informative, but also comes with it, like to Alex's point, this understanding of, hey, we don't have all the answers. Like, we're trying to figure this out. We're doing work like this to collect a lot of research that's been done on this topic and see if we can come up with something that sort of moves the field in a direction. So my question within all of that is as researchers and as two guys that have put together a fantastic systematic review, do you guys write those for the scientific community, or do you write those for the athlete and for the coach? And where do you see those overlapping, and where do you maybe see a gap that could be somewhere down the line filled by a better understanding on both sides of what is truly happening at the level of the athlete? That seems like another one of those existential questions that I'm just throwing out there to see if you can answer.
I think that we always look one part, and that's really nice to work with Rafael. He always looks at the practical application. So it's not just, we are not doing only science. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of things here in-house where you just look, how does any mechanisms work? How does they influence other things? So what we are doing, or what we try to do, is just to get the practical part also. So what can we just drive from this? What we just looking at? What means this for normal people, for the athlete, for a soccer player, whoever? So mm-hmm. I think we always try to get those together. But, well, we know there's always a lot of discussion going on before we just like conduct those studies, because it's really difficult just to work it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and regarding your question for who we write the reviews, I think I don't know if I should say that, but I think it also depends on the results. So if mm-hmm. we would have found with our study that it's, for example, 11 a.m. is the best time of exercise and everybody should exercise at 11 a.m., then that would definitely be something for the lay audience or for the general public where they could get a take-home message. But if you come to a conclusion that more research is needed, that we can't make any clear recommendations, then I can clearly understand that the general public cannot gain any knowledge from that meta-analysis or has any take-home message, because they are not the people who then conduct the research studies that are missing. So I think it depends on a little bit what the result is, but sometimes it's also just good to know or have a result that something is not working, or something is more complex, or that certain methods do not work. That's also important information for many athletes, if they know that they can stop certain things or stop doing certain things because there's no evidence that they work. So sometimes it's not only what can you do, but also what can you stop doing.
I'm sitting here chuckling as you say that, because I agree with you 1000%. Evidence showing that something that you are doing isn't working, or might not be working the way that you think it is. Yet, I mean, time and again, we see people clinging on to, I mean, we talk about path dependency here quite a bit, like people clinging on to things that they're convinced works because it's done, you know, it's worked for them for years and years. And I guess within that, for you guys, and just the, I would imagine that being in the field of exercise science at the level that you guys are at changes the way, or gives you an interesting perspective on the conversation around how do you train a human being? What does that look like? How do you manage athletes? So can it be like, is it frustrating for you to open up Instagram and see a thing like 11 a.m. is the best time to work out because we did a study on three people and that's what we found? I mean, is that, that has to be infuriating at some level for you guys.
Kind of. I think it depends if the statement comes from general people or people who are not in the science field or working in the science field, then yeah, it's not ideal and we don't like it, but we don't really get angry or frustrated. What I think is much more frustrating is if other researchers who haven't done any research on certain topics comment on studies like that or comment in interviews and give recommendations on topics where they have clearly not done any work on. I think that's the more frustrating part, because for us, it's clear if we haven't done research on a certain topic, we don't give interviews or don't give any public statements on that.
You guys picked the wrong industry to be.
I can't think of anybody who's got a PhD and acts like it makes them an expert on everything and capitalizes on that. I haven't seen that at all. I don't know what you're talking about.
There's no one in this space that does that.
So I'm gonna narrow us down to a real specific question, and I'm just gonna ask the two of you guys, what time of day do you guys train and why?
Depends when I have time. When there are no students around, I'll go for training.
Sounds about right.
Me personally, I always exercise in the morning. Because
have
I
you confirmed that you're a morning person through your research?
Yeah, I'm a morning person. I wake up quite early in the morning. But for me, if I don't get it done in the morning, I don't get it done at all during the day. So for me, it's just a time when nothing else is going on. If I try to exercise in the evening or afternoon or something like that, then always other things come up. So
I think you're going to have a lot of people that listen to this that are nodding their heads right now saying, yep, that sounds about right. If it doesn't happen in the morning, it doesn't happen. So let me ask you this then, as sort of a closer or moving in that direction. You guys mentioned sort of at the conclusion of this that there's no clear evidence for or against a particular time of day. So would a good overall recommendation be, and I think you kind of just nailed this, the best time of day to train is whenever it best fits into your schedule or whatever feels the best for you. You can kind of self-select that. And then kind of back to one of the earlier questions that we hit on with the Army and larger organizations that train collectively, as sort of a follow-on question, what kind of factors do you think are worth prioritizing when choosing a time? So we've moved from the level of the human now to the level of the masses. I think there were two questions baked in there, but that might have been incredibly confusing.
Yeah, for me, it sounded more like three questions.
That's fair.
So the first point that I want to point out is just because we don't know yet what the best time of exercise is during the day, it does not mean that it's irrelevant. So from everything that we've seen so far, we think that it's really important to consider the time of the day when you exercise. We just can't tell you yet what the best time is. So regarding your other question, of course, before you don't exercise at all, you should probably just put it in the day where you have time to do it. But if you're a competitive athlete or if you exercise for a living in any way, then you might really want to consider at what time you exercise, because then it plays an important role. Mm-hmm. But obviously, before you don't do anything, you should do it. And then regarding the masses, it depends. If you have the example of the army, what we've seen is that for at least young men, it seems that on a group average, the highest performance seems to be in the late afternoon, early evening. So if you need to have all people exercise at the same time of the day, it might be beneficial to try out the late afternoon, early evening. But to be honest, I don't see a reason why it shouldn't be possible to schedule different times of the day for exercise and then just let the people choose. So even if it's not their best time and if they cannot anticipate their peak, I think it should be possible to.
He's trying to start fights right now.
Hey, listen, you and me both. I hope people hear that and think, oh, maybe we could change things up a little bit, but we'll see.
And even if it's just two times of the day where you offer the opportunity to exercise, I think you will have something like physical exercise, maybe study time or something, and then you can just switch between those two. Even that would already increase the possibilities.
Well, I mean, for the senior leaders that listen to this, they heard it here first. Science tells us that we should have more than one time of day for physical training.
Yeah, at least give them the choice of two options.
So as we get close to wrapping up here, I just want to cover my bases. Is there anything you wish we had asked you that we missed? Is there anything we should have asked you that we didn't consider?
No, I don't think so. What concerning time? No.
Perfect. Well, I know you guys have joined us from pretty far away in Switzerland, so I want to be the first to thank both of you because I know it's in the evening there. So thank you for coming on. Thank you for your work. I mean, this has been fantastic. For the people listening, we will have a link for both of these guys in the show notes. We'll have a link to the study and then any other relevant stuff that we've mentioned. So again, thank you both for coming on, and thank you for sharing one computer and two cameras.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you very much for having us.
Yes, thank you.
Hey, Alex, let's cover our ass real quick.
Oh, great idea, Drew. All right, guys. The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entities they represent.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode. Before you go, please rate and review the pod on the listening platform of your choice. You can also visit us on our website at www.mopsinmos.com. That's mops, the letter N, mos.com. You can check out the library of podcast episodes, our latest blog entries, any helpful resources, and also sign up for our newsletter.
Drew nailed it. Just to underline a couple of things, the podcast entries have in-depth show notes on the website. So if you missed anything or you want to read any of the research we talk about, it is all there. You can, at the bottom of the website, sign up with your email and receive future updates from us. The blog posts go a little bit more in-depth in kind of written form on a couple of topics we get questions about all the time. But most importantly, I just want to ask all you guys, our best way the word gets out is absolutely word of mouth. So tell your friends, tell the people you work with, anybody you think would find it useful. Thanks for spreading the word.
If you have any questions or comments, feel free to shoot us an email at either Drew or Alex at mopsandmos.com.
Or there's a contact form on the website.
Thank you.